This week on 40%, we're going to talk about avoiding burnout. Companies allocate a lot of resources trying to increase productivity and efficiency. They ask questions like, how can we do more with less? How can we optimize this effort? How can we automate this process? How can we measure the impact of X? And how can we do all of this while increasing ROI? And for good reason, these factors influence profitability. Putting the time and the energy into creating scalable processes and making decisions based on empirical evidence is good for business long term, if you have the access to the information and the resources to do this. But what happens when you have limited resources to inform the answers to these questions? If you worked at a startup, I bet you've been in this situation, and I bet you heard the expression, "We build the plane as we're flying it." The resourcefulness that is required in this environment can be energizing, inspiring, and it can be an incredible way to build a professional skill set through hands-on experience that you wouldn't get anywhere else. But this fast pace that's required naturally leads to shortcuts, because a lot of the time you simply don't have the resources that you need to get done what you need to get done. Maybe you don't have the right amount of employees. Maybe you don't have the right amount of funding for a specific initiative. Maybe you don't have enough time in the day. But you do what you can, you stand it up, and you celebrate the wins as they come. Sometimes it can feel like you're on a roller coaster. One day you're acquiring a new round of funding, and then the next day, a release can take down your entire product. And this is going to impact your entire workforce, from the engineers who are up all night creating a fix to the customer-facing roles who are fielding customer frustration. I bet at this point you're wondering, how does any of this relate to avoiding burnout? Well, your brain works the same way. Your brain helps you make decisions and respond to situations based on available resources and data. And in this case, when I refer to data, I'm referring to past experiences that your brain can rely on to help you respond to situations that are currently happening. When you take shortcuts with your mental health due to limited resources, you are eventually going to feel them in many parts of your life, and so will others. You can't operate at the same level of intensity forever. Everyone's limit looks different, but everyone indeed has a limit. And when you're at a heightened sense of stress when you're approaching this limit, you're in a state of what we call deregulation. And when you're deregulated, you aren't going to make decisions or behave as if you normally would. It's biologically not possible. If you haven't invested time into thinking about the amount of energy that you have or how to allocate the amount of energy that you have, you're most certainly going to experience burnout at some point in your career. Burnout looks different for everyone. But there are people that have spent a ton of time defining the stages of burnout that we're going to review today. Some people say it comes in 3 stages. Some people say it comes in 12. For our purposes, I'm going to use a model created by Big Self School that describes the cycle in 5 stages. You might not experience all of these stages. You might experience some in tandem with others. You might experience them out of order. But the important thing to note here is that when you begin to recognize the indicators of what burnout can look like, you can use this awareness to interrupt the end result that is burnout. What I like about this model is that it comes with a graphic. So for our purposes today, I'm going to describe to you the graphic created by Big Self School. I want you to imagine a match with the flame at the end of it. The flame has 4 layers. There's an outermost white layer, below that a yellow layer, below that an orange layer, and then the most inner layer that is red. Let's go through each layer as it relates to burnout. The first layer is subtle dissatisfaction, the outermost white layer. The first stage is characterized by a lack of awareness that anything is wrong. You might have minor thoughts of discomfort or a subtle gut feeling that something's off, but most likely you're going to write this off as, oh, it's just a bad day. Oh, it's just life. The next stage, the yellow layer, is called subconscious disregard. This stage of burnout introduces thoughts and emotions that are increasingly uncomfortable. You might have repetitive mental patterns that start nagging you, signaling that something's off balance. At this point, your subconscious starts to actively work out ways to manage the stress. So your dysfunction at work might translate into you getting annoyed with your partner. or your roommate. You might start feeling more jealous of your friend's successes. You might start being a little more judgmental than you usually are. You might even start blaming everyone around you for how you feel. The important thing to note here is that your awareness of your discomfort is still in your subconscious. The next stage is the orange layer, and that is called conscious numbing. And this is when it has moved from your subconscious to your awareness. So this is the stage when burnout symptoms begin to come up in your behavior. So these feelings of overwhelm, exhaustion, anxiety are just too much to keep inside anymore. So you're going to start relying on one or more numbing techniques to defer discomfort. Think drinking to excess, binge eating, scrolling endlessly on social media. The list can really go on. You're going to do whatever possible to avoid the feeling of stress and discomfort that you have. The next layer is the red, most inner core. This is anxious exhaustion, and this often coincides with conscious numbing. Because when you think about it, you're going to be numbing because you're overstimulated to power through the challenges, and then you're going to bottom out and feel extremely low, and then the cycle continues. This cycle is incredibly exhausting, and it keeps you trapped in a state of anxiety. You'll know you're at this stage when things seem to suck more than they don't. You are going to have a hard time resting. Even when you are supposed to be taking time off, you can't help but think about all of the things that you need to do. You're going to start experiencing more extreme emotions because, again, you're in a state of deregulation. And the very end of this cycle is the burnt match, and you are burnt out. And the most common symptom of this final stage is either a complete physical shutdown or uncontrollable anxiety. And you're going to know that you're officially burnt out when you are extremely emotionally and physically exhausted. You're just spent. You're tired all the time. Your rest isn't restful. You can't focus on anything that you have to do. You might be isolating due to a lack of energy to give to others. You might be frustrated with people more than you usually are consistently. You don't enjoy doing parts of your job that you used to anymore. You might be feeling apathetic, like, what's the point? You might even have doubts about your value and ability. So the question now becomes, how can you avoid burnout? Here's a three-step process that I recommend. Step one, establish self-check-ins. Step two, evaluate, communicate, and maintain your boundaries. And step three, develop an in case of emergency toolkit. Step one, establish self-check-ins. Self-check-ins can look different for everyone, but a tool that I like to use to evaluate my capacity is rating where I'm at on a scale of 1 to 10 each day before I start work. 1 being the lights are on, but no one's home, to 10 being I'm at a Beyonce level of excellence. And this serves two purposes. One, it helps me figure out what I have to give so I can adjust accordingly. And two, it gives me some insight into how my behaviors and habits impact my ability. I know that if I'm at a 6 or above, I can approach the work that I have to get done with a greater sense of ease. If I'm at a 5 or below, I know that I'm going to refer to my emergency toolkit to get me through the day, which we'll go over in a minute. If I'm consistently at a 5 or below for an extended period of time, I know it's time to evaluate my routines, my habits, my behaviors, and adjust however I can. What I'm doing here is gathering data and making informed decisions, just like you would at work. Step two, evaluate, communicate, and maintain your boundaries. As a professional, it's your responsibility to figure out reasonable boundaries and behave accordingly. But it's your employer's responsibility to create a culture where these boundaries are respected. Ask yourself, what can you tolerate in a workplace and what can't you tolerate in a workplace? Get very clear on these non-negotiables. You might be someone when the workday ends that you shut your computer and you dedicate time to unplugging, and that's okay. Does your job require you to be available outside of established working hours? Ask yourself, what is the maximum amount of time that I'm willing to be available? What can I do to maintain this boundary? Maybe I turn off my notifications within a specific time frame. Does your job require you to work 12-hour shifts for consecutive days? What are you doing to prioritize rest and recovery? It's critical that your boundaries are communicated clearly once you figure them out. Because if your boundaries don't align with your workplace expectations, it's going to be a recipe for disaster. Lastly, it's up to you and your employer to work together to honor the boundaries that you have set. If there are extenuating circumstances where your boundaries must be breached, how can you reevaluate the remainder of your commitment for the work week? Step 3, develop an in case of emergency toolkit. There's that saying, fail to plan, plan to fail. And then there's another saying, make a plan and life laughs at you. So which is it? I don't know. But what I do know is that you are most certainly going to experience hardships in life no matter how much you plan. But having strategies to pull from can help you get through. These tools and strategies look different for everyone, ranging from the cliche bubble bath to skydiving. Maybe you need to take PTO. Maybe you can delegate, ask for help, take a break. Really, just unplugging for 5 minutes, going for a walk, and taking it 1 hour at a time is really the best you can do. Maybe you watch some funny or inspiring YouTube videos. Maybe you cry. Maybe you scream. Maybe you spend time with your support network, like friends, family, pets, or your therapist. Invest in finding activities that make it just 10% better. There is an important distinction I want to make about coping versus numbing, particularly because I used to get these confused a lot. Numbing involves ignoring or suppressing warning signs. Think drinking to excess, overeating, binging reality TV, scrolling through social media, all those things. And I get it. Sometimes life is really, really hard. And sometimes you're at a level one and you don't even have the energy to cope. And that's okay. No one's perfect. But eventually the numbing is going to compound and you're going to be right back to where you started, most of the time worse than before. Coping involves acknowledging the discomfort. So think of that expression, the only way out is through. The unfortunate reality is some days you're going to be at a 5 and you still have a deadline to meet. So you need to ask yourself, what's in your toolkit to help you pull through? In the beginning of the episode, I asked a lot of questions that companies use to uncover opportunities for increased productivity and efficiency. If we know that our mental wellness impacts our professional capacity, which involves our productivity and efficiency, shouldn't we be asking the same questions about ourselves? How can you accomplish more with less dread? How can you optimize the energy that you have? How can you recognize indicators that help you avoid harmful behaviors? How do you evaluate how tasks influence your energy level? How can you increase the ROI of showing up to work? Sure, I get it. Sometimes it's easier to figure out these solutions at work. But if we want to make sustainable contributions, if we want to advance throughout our career, and we want to enjoy the ride just a little bit more, we need to recognize the indicators of burnout and adjust accordingly. By all means, build the plane as you're flying it, but have a parachute in the form of self-care nearby.